The final reason for why I believe that this book has become incredibly popular, why it's really touched a nerve, is that it deals with the whole issue of spirituality. I think embedded within it is a search for spirituality. While we may have rejected traditional religion, nevertheless, we still feel ourselves, many of us, to be spiritual people. If you read the back page of the Radio Times, I think, has it changed now? I haven't seen the Radio Times for a while. But it used to be kind of one person reflecting on their life, or a day in their life, or whatever. And it felt for a while that week after week after week, the celebrity would be saying something along the lines of, I'm not religious, but I am very spiritual. You hear it all the time. We long for spirituality. Interest in spirituality is at the highest it's been for decades within Western culture. And yet, having rejected Orthodox Christianity. So we still long for it. Especially mysterious and especially non-challenging esoteric ideas. The more mysterious they are, it seems, the more inclined we are to take them on board. And the impact of feminism, of course, on Western culture has made Dan Brown's focus on the sacred feminine incredibly popular and very attractive. Dan Brown says, my hope in writing this novel was that the story would serve as a catalyst and a springboard for people to discuss the important topics of faith, religion and history. They are important topics. And I'm delighted that Dan Brown has written this novel to provoke this kind of discussion. Because people are discussing these questions of faith and spirituality and religious history in ways that they haven't done for a very long time. And as he says in a recording on his website from an address he gave at the New Hampshire Writers Project, he says that the only enemy of real religion, of any religion, is apathy. The only true enemy is apathy. And good, vigorous debate is a good antidote to apathy. So I'm all for debate, and I'm all for Dan Brown stirring it up. I just have a little bit of problem with this fact page. We'll come back to that in a moment. Dan Brown himself sees himself, he describes himself as a Christian, and very much sees himself as a spiritual seeker. He's not a Christian in any orthodox sense. He says, I really wish I had the luxury of absolute unquestioning faith. I do not. And I'm still searching. I wrote this novel as part of my own spiritual quest. When he says he wishes he had the luxury of absolute unquestioning faith, when you put that alongside other comments he's made, it's actually clear that while he's a little envious of those who can be absolute in their faith, he does also see it as a very dangerous position to take up. Here's a quote from Daryl Bock, who is one of a number of people who've gone into print writing about Dan Brown's problems with his history. Daryl Bock says the reason that he wrote his book was this. The key was when I heard Dan Brown on national television say that if he were writing non-fiction, he would not change a thing about the history. Not only that, but he said he had heavily researched his work and had become a believer in these views. Views that say that the church has had this one long history of suppressing women, of oppressing people of all types, of perpetuating a lie. The lie that Jesus was divine and died and rose again. And the truth, as far as Dan Brown is concerned, clearly from this comment and others that he's made, the truth for Dan Brown is that Jesus had married Mary Magdalene, that they had given rise to a bloodline that's come down through history via the Merovingian kings of France down to the present day, protected by this Priory of Zion. That Jesus was just a man and nothing more. Dan Brown says that he believes that, and he thinks that's what the history is. In this business about the sacred feminine, he talks a lot about goddess worship and rediscovering the lost goddess. Let me say a little bit about this for a couple of minutes before we sing another song and then have some questions. Because I think this is where Dan Brown gets particularly interesting and where I particularly want to engage with him. Here's a quote from the book where they're talking about the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail, don't suppose you'll mind me spoiling the story too much, will you? If you haven't read it by now, well, it's your own fault, probably. The Holy Grail, it turns out not to be a chalice, though, of course, in the original Grail legends, it wasn't a chalice, it was a bowl. We'll leave that on one side. But the Grail is not a chalice, but the bloodline, this bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. But Robert Langdon says the Grail is symbolic of the lost goddess. When Christianity came along, the old pagan religions didn't die easily. Legends of chivalric quests for the lost Grail were in fact stories of forbidden quests to find the lost sacred feminine. Knights who claimed to be searching for the chalice were speaking in code as a way to protect themselves from a church that had subjugated women, banished the goddess, burned non-believers, and forbidden the pagan reverence for the sacred feminine. Christianity is a masculine religion, he sees. Now, I don't know whether when you were reading this stuff about the goddess, it rang bells for you, but it does for many people in our world. The search for the goddess or goddess spirituality is huge. If you do a search on Google, you'll get something like 2 million hits on just on goddess. The book includes then this quest for the sacred feminine, which is going on within our world. Feminism has, of course, radically and rightly altered women's expectations of our world. Rightly, they no longer want to be defined in relation to men and to be seen as second-class citizens. They expect personal fulfillment in their own rights. Absolutely, that's how it should be. It should never have been any different. But it does mean that women, many women at least, feel that the traditional church isn't a place for them. It's a place for men to be in charge. Now, things have changed quite a bit in the last few years. Very firmly in Dan Brown's sights is the Roman Catholic Church. Of course, the Anglican Church, as you well know, has had all sorts of debates going on in recent years, and they'll carry on. But it does mean that this is a very real issue for some people. This is Dan Brown talking at the address at the New Hampshire's Writers Project I was mentioning just now. 2,000 years ago, he says, we lived in a world of gods and goddesses. Today, we live in a world solely of gods. Women in most cultures have been stripped of their spiritual power. The novel touches on questions of how and why this shift occurred, and on what lessons we might learn from it regarding our future. So he's saying that the novel is very explicitly dealing with this lost goddess spirituality. This idea, the sacred feminine that is touching a nerve for so many people, making people feel there is some spirituality out there that can suit me, that can be safe for me, and isn't handed down through this succession of authoritarian men. Now the next quote is from Margaret Starbird. She's a feminist writer and one of the big influences on Dan Brown. Two of her books are mentioned by name within The Da Vinci Code, The Woman with the Alabaster Jar, and the other one completely escapes me at the moment. I can't remember, never mind. Margaret Starbird says in an interview in Secrets of the Code, for two millennia, Christians have been attributing exclusively masculine images to God, using masculine pronouns when speaking of the Creator. The entire Trinity was characterized as masculine from the 5th century onwards in Western Europe. The sacred feminine is that other face of God that hasn't been honored over the two millennia of Christianity, at least not as a fully equal partner. In Christianity, the paradigm of partnership, the life-giving principle on planet Earth, hasn't been celebrated or even acknowledged. I believe we need to reclaim the lost feminine at all levels, physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual. We have suffered the loss of eros, relationship, and deep connection with the feminine, the body, the emotions, the intuitive, the kinship of all the living, the blessings of the beautiful and bountiful planet. This is one of the biggest influences on Dan Brown, is the writings of Margaret Starbird. It's a very negative view of the church, very pro-feminine spirituality. Here's Mary Daly, another radical feminist writer, who says, if God is male, then male is God. It's no wonder, with that kind of idea, that the Christian church seems to be in a bad way in Western culture. Brown uses this word in the Da Vinci Code. It's a wonderful word from the Hopi native Indians, Kleanaskapti. I only know how to pronounce that from listening to interviews of him on the internet. Kleanaskapti means life out of balance. And that is where he's absolutely put his finger on where our culture is at. Because we live in a culture where so many people feel that life is out of balance. We have an ecological crisis on our hands. We have oppression, poverty, and all kinds of problems. Of course this is a world out of balance. The view of the goddess spirituality people is that by recovering the goddess, we will recover balance. Here is the definition of the goddess from a website of Covenant of the Goddess, which is a Wiccan group. The immanent life force as Mother Nature, the Earth, the cosmos, the interconnectedness of all life. This is a very pantheistic view of spirituality. The goddess is everything, including you, of course. Or another leader in the movement, Starhawk, another Wiccan. The symbolism of the goddess is not a parallel structure to the symbolism of God the Father. The goddess doesn't rule the world. She is the world. Or how about this from an Australian goddess spirituality website? Quite an amusing one in many ways, worth having a look at. By honouring the feminine divine, the writer says, we reconnect with our inner goddess. That's the aim of the website, to help you, even if you're a man, to reconnect with your inner goddess. Don't think that this goddess stuff is just for the women. We empower ourselves spiritually, psychologically, emotionally and physically, so our true selves are set free. God is within you, or rather, goddess is within you. Or how about this one? The goddess is quite simply the embodiment of the divine in a female body. Not any female body, but every female body. Every female that has learnt to deny the warrior in her and to embrace the goddess. She's discerning and acts with integrity. She has a core of inner peace that is unshakable. The goddess radiates an energy that is so powerfully beautiful, loving and soft that others are drawn to her like a magnet. This is the spirituality that Dan Brown is advocating. And of course he finishes up at the end of the book with Langdon falling to his knees above the place where he believes the bones of Mary Magdalene are buried. Like the murmurs of spirits in the darkness, forgotten words echoed. The quest for the Holy Grail is the quest to kneel before the bones of Mary Magdalene, a journey to pray at the feet of the outcast one. With a sudden upwelling of reverence, Robert Langdon fell to his knees. For a moment he thought he heard the woman's voice, the wisdom of the ages, whispering up from the chasms of the earth. Quite an anticlimactic finish, but it does finish very much putting forward this goddess spirituality. The trouble with this is there isn't any evidence for the story that is underpinning it. The story that there was once a golden age in Europe where there were matriarchal societies, everybody lived in peace, and people worshipped goddess primarily rather than male gods or whatever. The evidence isn't there for it. And when you do look at those cultures that have worshipped the goddess, cultures that Dan Brown talks about, you discover that goddess worship isn't all he cracks it up to be. Because those cultures were still male-dominated cultures. Hieros Gamos, the sacred union, the sacred sect rite that he talks about quite often, was primarily for men to reach spiritual fulfillment. Not for the women. This was a means for a man to get absolute fulfillment with God. Here's Robert Langdon in the book, historically intercourse was the act through which male and female experienced God. The ancients believed that the male was spiritually incomplete until he had carnal knowledge of the sacred feminine. Physical union with the female remained the sole means through which man could become spiritually complete and ultimately achieve gnosis, knowledge of the divine. Since the days of Isis, sex rites have been considered man's only bridge from earth to heaven. By communing with woman, Langdon said, man could achieve a climactic instant when his mind went totally blank and he could see God. Well, that's one way of describing it, I suppose. But doesn't that give away that all of this actually, for all he says about the sacred feminine, goddess spirituality, if that's at its heart, is primarily to serve a man and not the woman? Here's James Robinson, the editor of the Library of Nag Hammadi. The Nag Hammadi documents are referred to quite a bit in the Da Vinci Code, including the Gospel of Philip, which Dan Brown seems to put a lot of weight on. Robinson says, if one reads the entire Gospel of Philip, it becomes clear that the writer disdains sex as beastly, literally comparing it to animals. The documents that Dan Brown says are the true origins of the Christian Church actually go against his message of the sacred feminine. They are anti-sex and they are anti-women. Here's a quote right from the very end of the Gospel of Thomas, which he also refers to. Jesus said, I myself shall leave Mary in order to make her male, so that she too may become a living spirit resembling you males. For every woman who will make herself male will enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, that's not a very feminist message, is it? And Dan Brown says that the Gnostic Gospels, these supposedly suppressed Gospels, he says these are the true records of Christian origins which teach reverence for the sacred feminine as part of Christianity's birthright. It simply isn't the case. They're anti-sex and they're anti-women. Far more anti-women, in fact, than the Gospels we have in the New Testament. I hope maybe we'll pick that up in questions, because I haven't got time to cover it now.